Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
Hey, UK Bills Mafia. This is Christian Wade of your Buffalo Bills. This is the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast with your hosts, Matt and Alex. Let's go, Buffalo! Woo!
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast, Bills news with a UK twist. And it's wild, wild card weekend. And the Bills are facing the Colts, number 2 seed versus number 7.
What are they calling? Are they calling like super wild card or mega wild? What kind of stupid name are they calling it?
I have no idea. Oh, no, they're calling it super wild card.
Ugh, whatever. We should have a goddamn bye week. These assholes.
As you know, that's Alex, and this is Matt. Alex, how are you doing?
I'm fine. I think my dog's going to need another surgery.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, well, no, it's not as bad as it sounds initially. She tore her, like, LCL, PCL, ACL, you know, one of the CLs.
Oh.
And they fused a plate to, for, like, the tendon to the bone to re-heal the tendon. But that's healed, but the dog just hates having the plate in her knee. So she's not really using her leg. The vet said it should be healed. So now they want to take the plate out. And I'm just like, Jesus.
What
surgeries can you have?
Yeah.
It? In a 12-month period, this will be her third surgery on the same leg in the same area. Oh, my God.
I'm lucky that my knee is actually only cartilage and not ACL. It was that close to an ACL. Tear on their rupture, but luckily for me it was just it's just cartilage, so I'm waiting for my next doctor's appointment to find out what the hell's going on with that.
Okay. Yeah,
but knock on wood. I know how she feels.
I've never had an injury, so you know, keep that.
just tell your dog I know how they feel.
She doesn't speak English, but I'll pass it along.
Oh dear. So this episode, obviously, we are going to be talking Colts, talking the wild card game. But first and foremost, you probably have read it, you've probably seen it online. But I just want to break down the Players Tribune article by Deion Dawkins. I think it's really powerful in what he actually goes on to say. I mean, his opening words were, "We play for the city, but we belong to this community. We've got your back, and you've all got ours." So, I mean, that is just part of his 9-point tribute to the fans. I mean, what to you? If I go through some of these, and I'll ask you, obviously, ask for your opinions at the halfway through and during it. I just want you to think about what it says about the players, their bond with each other, the trust they have in the guy sitting next to them in the locker room, and what the affinity and the bond they have with their fans and community.
Yeah, before you get to those points, let me just say, remember when we gave Terrell Owens the key to the city?
Yeah.
I mean, how stupid was that? I mean, if anybody deserves it, it might be Deion Dawkins, honestly. Like, I know Josh Allen's the face of the franchise, but it seems
if
like
he wins us the Super Bowl, I would say Josh Allen.
Yeah, but I mean, when you look at the pulse of the team and the connection between the team and the city, I mean, Dawkins was here when we were bad.
Mm.
You know, he was one of the first guys to come in this, you know, new era. And this guy is just like, he's the lifeblood of the team, I think.
Mm. Well, it's interesting. He goes on to talk about the camaraderie. And in 2017, his rookie year, at Thanksgiving, all the O-line went round Eric Wood's house for Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. They would actually literally have a competition during the meal to see who would gain the most weight. They
These
literally
are
had a
professional athletes, ladies and gentlemen. You got
they literally had a scale in the kitchen.
Yeah.
do it.
What other sport will allow you to get fat and still be productive in your sport? How great.
Exactly. And apparently Eric Wood obviously won it. So it was, I guess it was his rules, his decision and all that.
You see him lately?
No, not. Haven't seen him picture or video wise.
I think I've seen him do like video podcasts. The dude lost all that weight.
Mm.
I mean, he's looking. I think maybe I saw him on Jim Rome or Colin Cowherd, something like that. But yeah, that's the funny thing. The skill players, when they retire, they get fat.
Mm.
The fat players, when they retire, they lose all the weight. What a game.
Yeah.
What a game.
Mm. I mean, in the article, when he talks about that time around Eric's house in 2017, he actually said how Eric took him aside and said to him personally, said, "We see the type of player and guy you are and the person that we are going to pass that torch to." And that's coming to a 23-year-old rookie that they've already identified, and there's that respect there from the vets to the rookies and vice versa. And he goes on to say, Dawkins says in the article, "Yes, we are playing football. It's a football thing, but it also shows it's a family thing." And that just reminds me of the phrase from Bad Boys: "We ride together, we die together." obviously not Bad Boys for life, because they're not on the football field. They're Bad Boys for repelling the defense. But it's just that respect that's bounded around in the team, which I think really the reason why they're that successful, and that bond and unity is stronger than ever. That one loss won't really damage the team. But and a good example of it, he summed it up after the Cardinal game.
Yeah.
Obviously Arizona celebrating the Hail Murray,
mm-hmm.
like they've won the Super Bowl. But the Bills' mentality after it was, we'll give them that. It's time to take a bye and reset. Tuning it out, moving on, is what all successful teams should do.
Yeah.
So he went on to say, "Every game is not the Super Bowl for the team. The Super Bowl is the Super Bowl for the team."
Because that's our
again
goal.
That mentality.
Yeah, I think it was Micah Hyde that also said after that Arizona game, the pain of that, you know, the feeling of having victory snatched from you, it brought them together. It motivated them harder. It pushed them. It brought them together. You know, it made them realize that, you know, every single play, the game can change on a dime, and they were stronger because of it. And we've seen them since the bye week, they've just been unstoppable.
Exactly. So it's like the light's been switched. The light's been switched on at that point.
I would say we've been so good all year. The light's been on, but it's like we went from like a traditional light bulb to like an LED light bulb. You know, we got brighter. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, you could see it by the way that, what was it, which game it was? I think Allen and Diggs were both having the interview, and suddenly all you see was Deion Dawkins and Mario Addison come in and almost like photobomb and hijack the interview. It just shows that this team respect each other and have that bond. I mean, he's called Diggs more than cool, one of the best teammates he's ever had.
Mm-hmm.
He goes on to say that Diggs himself is obsessed with making people around him better, whether it's staying after practice and working with Gabe Davis, speaking up in meetings. And he's gone on to say that he's not a cancer, diva, non-team player. He's not, but if anything, it just shows that respect.
It's a real important thing to look at the coaching staff and how they've been able to create this environment.
Mm.
Minnesota was upset, and the coaching staff did nothing to fix that. We're talking about from the front office down. They've created they've created a culture. They've created an environment in which players can come here. McDermott said this about McKenzie. Players can come here and become their best self.
Yeah.
It's not just about a weight room. It's not just about, you know, a playbook. It's just about the way you treat each other. It's about the goals. It's about the motivation. It's about the trust. It's about the, you know, the belief in one another. And I think we're probably one of the best locker rooms in the NFL that has this feeling, this aura of just anything is possible.
Yeah.
And that's a massive credit to Bean, McDermott, and everybody else in the front office and coaching staff.
Yeah. So, I mean, if anyone should get the keys to the city, it should be the Brandon Bean or Sean McDermott, to be honest, rather than any of the players.
Yeah, you know.
But, no, I mean, he goes on to end it by saying that the Bills Mafia have actually given them an identity even when they were losing games. And that's helped them build that culture and bridged us into the era of winning football. And how even this year, with no fans in the stadium until this weekend, that us fans have actually injected a lot of joy into a miserable season of the external factors with COVID and all that, which makes the players want to run through walls for the fans. And I mean, Deion Dawkins went on to say that all his inboxes, whether it be Twitter or Instagram, were just lit up with fans actually showing pictures, stories, and all that, which shows that the relationship really is that tight knit. And anyone that comes to Buffalo will almost instantly gain that respect, and over time not want to leave or have that bond with that community.
So let me ask you this question. We say that this is a podcast with a UK twist, and I'm always going to try and throw some kind of UK something in there. In Buffalo, we have the Bills and the Sabres, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And my fandom has switched between the Bills and the Sabres, essentially based on who's doing better, you know, who's more fun to watch. But it's always a 1A, 1B scenario.
Yeah.
Obviously, right now, 1A is Buffalo, the Bills. 1B is the Sabres. For you, because you're not from Buffalo, I know West Ham is your team.
Mm-hmm.
How do you rank your sports fandom? Bills, West Ham, you know, if you follow a rugby club, like what's number one in your heart? What's number two in your heart? Is it a 1A, 1B thing? Like, you know, you grew up a West Ham fan, right?
Yeah.
So that's in your blood. You became a Bills fan, right? But like with what's going on now, like in the Bills, you know, we're growing the UK Mafia. We created this podcast. Like it's becoming a lifestyle. Like where are the Bills in your life?
Initially, obviously West Ham will always be probably number one for me. Probably will be turn up to 1A. But in the early times of my support for the Bills, I had them down as number three because I still am a huge Speedway fan.
Okay.
And our local team, Paul Pirates, I followed them with interest. So at the time, the Bills were number three on there. But the more and more I got watching it, and the more and more I started, we started the Bills Backers UK in 2013. And the way it's now gone on for these 7 years, it's more that it's overcome, it's gone second, and it's starting to get to the to 1B. But West Ham will always have that number one place. So it'll be 1A, 1B soon.
Yeah.
But West Ham will always be my main heart belongs to, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, in the early 2000s, I tried to find myself like a second NFL team, and I honestly couldn't. Like, I thought about like, you know, Green Bay. I thought about like Seattle, you know, like kind of cool niche teams, like no one that's like, you know, popular and full of cash. Like I could never have become a Cowboys fan or something like that.
Mm.
Even with hockey, when the Sabres were down, I was like, all right, I need an interesting team. I know that, you know, from the Sabres, Alexander Mogilny went to Vancouver. Pavel Bure, really fun. So Vancouver was kind of my team for a little bit. But then again, you know, it just falls away. In baseball, I needed a baseball team. And in high school, a lot of my friends were Red Sox fans. But honestly, with the way that team is being run now in their front office, it's embarrassing. And also, you know, Boston, ew. So,
yeah,
that's kind of fallen away. But yeah, it's just really interesting to see like how someone outside of Buffalo could fall in love with this team, because honestly, all the news about this team is just, I can't blame anybody. Like, I'm never going to say the bandwagon is closed, because if you really want to jump on and put your heart into this, come on. You know, you're welcome. You know, join
the The only way I say to that is obviously bandwagon jump on, but don't jump off.
Yeah.
If we say we have the next 2 years, we win. Say we win back to back Super Bowls. It could happen, but obviously people jump on the bandwagon now, knowing that the trajectory's up. But as soon as, say, after year three, they somehow start plummeting down and all that, at that point, it's not time for those bandwagon fans that jumped on to jump off. They've got to take the rough with the smooth. Yeah, I think that's really what people have got to know if they're going to jump onto the bandwagon. I mean,
if it's life for me, if you want to share in my joy, it's got to be life for you as well.
Exactly. So let's get on with it. Let's get on with the Colts preview and the return of the comeback kid.
So here comes Frank Reich.
Yeah, the guy that led the biggest comeback in NFL history 28 years ago with against the Houston Oilers. The guy that had in his career 2,540 yards, 18 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. Realizing he's going to be forever known as a Buffalo Bills player, said it's a special trip, but a business trip. Mm-hmm. He'll always love Buffalo and always be a Bills fan. So do we roll out the red carpet, sing his praises for what he's done, or are we for the 60 minutes going, you're rubbish, your team's crap, we're going to demolish you?
It's a tricky subject that I'm going to walk the line on, because he won one game for us. He won one important game for us. Everything else he did as a backup quarterback was meh. You know, he did backup quarterback stuff. If that had led us to a Super Bowl win, then there's probably more in it for me. But I mean, I wasn't, you know, I wasn't grown enough to really appreciate it at the time. I was 5 or 6, you know, so I understand the importance of Frank Reich, but I mean, let's focus on, you know, what's more important here. Like, I'm not going to follow his career. Like, you know, I'm not going to be like a Colts fan because he's there. I mean,
yeah,
you look at Philip Rivers, you know, ew, you know, like, dude, shut up. Philip Rivers never shuts up.
Well, he's got 9 kids. Can't handle it.
Yeah, so annoying. He's got like 50 kids. It's just like, dude, just control yourself. I mean, the emotional side of it, I think it's long since passed where it's, oh, it's Frank Reich. Okay, cool. It's definitely not anything that really needs to carry any weight to it.
Yeah. And it's also the first home game we've had since we lost 30-27 to the Jags back in 1996.
Yeah, I went back and watched the highlights of that game. That was interesting.
Where it was the run game that really really sealed it for the Jags with 38 rushes, 184 yards to one touchdown compared to 29. Rushes 92 yards and one touchdown for the Bills. And even when Mark Brunell was actually picked off three times in that game. It still couldn't lead to a playoff win. So we've got that and a few other playoff games really to make amends for. And I think,
yeah, I mean, it's a completely different narrative. I mean, that was a Bills team who was at the end of the run and everyone was like, can they do it one more time? Here's a Bills team that's just starting its, you know, its mojo. You know, I mean, exactly. we got years left with these guys and they could really do something special.
Yeah. I mean, you just got to look really at, especially the last three games of what this offense done and what this team done. And it's going to be a really, really good matchup because the Colts, as we'll find out with all your stats, are not going to be the most easiest team to beat. They're still quite a good team. But the last three games for the Bills, their offense has put up 47.3 points per game, 357 yards or pass yards per game, 487.7 total yards per game, and a plus 88 point differential. That's last three games.
I mean, our offense is coming in hot and their defense is coming in a little cold. So, I mean, like with that, let's just dive in. I have a lot here. This might be a long show, but hell, it's the playoffs. And if you want to get prepared for what this game could be, I got everything for you.
So get your cup of tea, get your beer, get your cider, get whatever sorted because it's going to be a good one.
I mean, so the Colts are 11-5 and they're a weird 11-5. It's really tough to get a handle on like how I feel about them as a team. I mean, out of the gate, they lost to Jacksonville, you know, in week one. Then they beat down the Titans and then they got crushed by them in their second matchup. They took the Packers to overtime thanks to a kickoff fumble by Green Bay and then the Valdez-Scantling fumble in overtime. Then just recently they gave up a big lead to Pittsburgh 2 weeks ago and lost that game. They're one of those good, bad teams. I mean, they're 3-4 against winning teams and they're 8-1 against losing teams. So they do what they're supposed to, but against, you know, equal or tougher challenge, they have a little bit of trouble. Especially when you look at the fact that they had the easiest schedule in the AFC. And for comparison, the Bills had the 7th hardest. So like, you know, without breaking anything down, you know, what are your thoughts on the Colts?
I think they are a team that not to be underestimated. I mean, obviously, with the world we're at this season, the Colts almost are coming into it as an underdog, but they should not be classed. It should not be classed as that. They're a team that the Bills should be wary to face because they're good on offense. I mean, they've got two good running backs. Rivers on his day, he's 4-0 in wild card games, but any other time he's actually been a bit hit and miss in the playoffs. But he's still a guy that, give him the right protection and the right time, he can play. And then that defense is still one of the strongest up there, especially with Darius Leonard.
Yeah. So in terms of production, you know, they're 10th in the NFL in yards, 11th in passing, 11th in rushing, 10th in scoring percentage. So they're a fringe top 10 team. Looking at who they've played, they've played four top passing defenses: Chicago, Baltimore, Green Bay, and Pittsburgh. They averaged. Rivers averages 243 yards per game, 5 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. For comparison's sake, Buffalo has played 6 top passing defenses in 7 games, New England twice, Rams, Chargers, Pittsburgh, Arizona, San Fran. Josh Allen averages 260 yards per game and has a 16-4 touchdown to interception ratio. So when you look at when we're challenged, we step up. When Rivers is challenged, he's average.
Yeah.
So yeah. When you're looking at his playoff history, you know, 4-0 in wild card games, 5-6 in the playoffs altogether, though. 59% completion percentage, only an 84.2% passer rating, 14 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 241 yards per game. We know he puts up good numbers. Does his, I mean, his playoff numbers are kind of meh, but he's got a legacy. He's a guy who could possibly be a Hall of Famer. You know, is he elite? Was he elite? You know, how do you feel about Rivers? And at the same time, being drafted in the same year as Big Ben and Eli, who do you think is more dangerous in the playoffs this year, Big Ben or Philip Rivers?
Are we talking just about just them as a
just
whole?
Them. Yeah, just them cast? As just them as who they are, what they've been able to do.
To be honest, I would say Big Ben over, because Big Ben he can run. Rivers, I don't think I've really
Rivers
seen
has
him.
3 rushing yards on the season.
So he doesn't scramble that much. He's more of your particular pocket pass type guy. But obviously, can he get out and can he actually evade pressure? I mean, we see it with Big Ben all the time that he's that big lad.
Tough to get down. He's good at, you know, he's fidgety in the pocket.
But with Rivers, it seems like as soon as the pressure's on, he can't escape it and goes down quite easily. So in essence, when he's given time and given that protection, he can probably rip you apart. But as soon as that pressure is on and that protection is broken, you would rather have Big Ben than you would have Philip Rivers. Yeah. So he's more of your enigma, your hot and cold type player.
Yeah, I mean, Rivers is a statue back there, but just like Big Ben, he gets rid of the ball in like 2.4 seconds, 2.5 seconds, one of the fastest in the league. He goes through his progressions really fast, and he always has a jump off, and he loves his checkdowns. But, you know, we can talk about Philip Rivers, but honestly, the best way for the Colts to control this game is on the ground. Their strength is the run game. In the last 4 weeks, Jonathan Taylor has games of 253, 74, 83, and 150 with 7 touchdowns.
Mm.
Yeah. The one thing that I looked at through NFL Next Gen stats is the majority of his success has been to the left and up the middle, not so much to the right side, which actually, oddly, for week 13, he exclusively ran to the right side, 13 carries for 91 yards. But on the season, the Colts focus on running up the middle and to the left. He is really good at evading the first tackler and or the offensive line opens up massive holes for him. He's one of the best backs in the NFL, getting 3 yards before contact. That's top 5 in the league. A major credit goes to the offensive line, which absolutely is a top 10 unit. Through week 16, they have a 44-55 run pass ratio, which is the 8th highest run percentage in the league. They know what they need to do to win. It's Jonathan Taylor first, you know, passing second. They'll still pass. You know, they don't run as much as Baltimore does, but when they do pass, they're mildly successful at that.
And you've got Hines as well, and Hines actually is better out in backfield, but it's also that he gives you that threat at running back. So it's
he led their team in receptions this year.
Yeah, so they've got a double-headed monster that can beat you both in the run, because he's still a really good rusher as well, Hines.
Yeah,
In relief when he's done it. So it's their running game is probably the key to this. I think our passing defense, can really restrict Rivers and the offense, but we need that run defense to step up one more gear than what they have in the last few weeks.
The stats tell me that if he's getting 3 yards before contact, their offensive line is mauling guys. If there's any possibility for us to stop the run game, It's to beat them at the line of scrimmage. So we're talking, you know, probably a man coverage with multiple guys in the box. We have to get off our blocks. We have to fill our gaps because after contact, Taylor's average. Singletary and Moss rank higher than him in yards after contact, where he's 2.1 yards after contact. Singletary is 2.9, which is fourth best in the league, and Moss is 14th with 2.4 yards after contact. So if you hit him, you have a good chance to bring him down. You just have to hit him at the line of scrimmage. If he's getting through, if the offensive line is making holes, he's shifty enough to really get past guys. So this is really going to be a dogfight on defense.
Yeah. I think it's he was what was he, the third or fourth or something like that running back taken, Jonathan Taylor, this year. I think was he one of the first on there. But he's already, in my opinion, exceeded that. He probably is one of the best wide receivers, best running backs in last year's draft.
Well, not even in last year's draft. I mean, we're talking about he's in elite territory this year. His 77 yards per game is fifth best behind Derrick Henry, Delvin Cook, Nick Chubb, and Aaron Jones. I mean, that's elite territory. He's eighth among running backs with 5.0 yards per carry. That's 10th in the league because Lamar and Kyler are 1 and 2, which is a little unfair. But I mean, when you're talking about our passing offense is hot, their running game is super hot. He's top three in big plays with 35 runs over 10 yards. And he's got a lot of that in the last 5 weeks.
Yeah.
The biggest step I'd say is that they lost Anthony Costanzo on the O-line. He hurt his ankle before the Jags game. But then again, he ran for 253 against the Jags, but it's also the Jags.
Mm. Yeah.
So you wanna attack that backup role for whomever's filling in for Costanzo. Mm. So, I mean, we're talking about it's going to be a fight. I mean, how do you see our front seven attacking their O-line?
If we can get, as you say, stack the box as best as possible. I mean, obviously playing is it Poyer more in box and leave three out back or anything like that. I think that is the way to go to try and force Rivers to spread it around and put it on there. But I think we can get the pressure. They like to play multiple fronts. They like to mix up the coverage, whether it have three of them with their hands to the ground, three of them actually standing upright for the rush. I think we've got enough in this team, in this defense, in the front seven to really disguise our coverages and really hold the run defense. Mm-hmm. I think the key with that is to stop that defense, that rushing attack. Because is there anything really that we've seen from Rivers and throwing and his receiving options that really could scare us?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want to talk about the receivers, Rivers really spreads the ball around. Like I said, Hines is their leading receiver with 63. I mean, that only ranks 41st in the NFL. He had 482 yards. So part of the reason why he gets rid of the ball is if his receivers are covered, he drops it down and he does a pretty decent damage. But that 482 yards on 63 catches means that, you know, he doesn't really get far. So, I mean, their defenses have been able to scheme against the Colts passing game relatively successful. T.Y. Hilton led the team in yards with 762, and all of his touchdowns have come in the last like 6 weeks. So he's hot right now. You know, if you're talking about health, he's healthy and he's dangerous. So he's going to see a lot of Trey White, I would assume. And then focusing on their other receivers, Zach Pascal, Michael Pittman Jr., Pittman Jr., the rookie, but I would say that either the trust isn't there or they're average right now, because he doesn't really look to them that often. Pittman has size, which could come into play. But the good news is that when Rivers throws those 50-50 balls or anything over 20 yards, five of his 11 interceptions have come in those scenarios. So when he does take shots or when he does push the ball downfield, you know, he's old and his arm gets him into trouble in those scenarios.
I mean, I like it. As I say, it's going to be interesting. I mean, if we can build that lead from the get-go and put the Colts under a lot of pressure, they may move away from that run game and look to try and spread the ball, which will play into the Bills' hands, because A, they're not running Jonathan Taylor a lot, and also they're given the opportunity with Rivers, his weird release of the ball and all that, a chance for the interceptions and plays made, which give quite a few three and outs, give us a chance to build up that lead. So I think the onus to really stop this offense, Colts wise, is to build that lead and make Frank Reich actually think about whether to stick to the game plan or they go and try and live, let Rivers go arm to arm with Josh.
Yeah, I mean, the Bills' strength in overcoming the run game is to force other teams to throw the ball. We've been able to, like you said, build leads where teams feel like they need to keep up with us, and that gets them away from the run game. So, you know, with that, you know, let's focus on what our offense can do against their defense.
Yeah.
Indy's defense is what I would consider to be the 11th stingiest in the NFL, allowing 362 points over the season. That's 11th best in the league. Buffalo is 16th with 375, so it's not too big of a difference there. When you look at, you know, how we complained about our offense early on in the season, they only give up 10 fewer points on the season as a whole. So in looking at the season as a whole, our complaints about our defense at the beginning either were unjustified or our defense lately has been locked down. But staying on Indy's defense, they've played 7 of the top 12 passing offenses in the league and 5 of the top 10 rushing teams in the league. Their defense has been tested and they've stood up against it. They've allowed the 8th fewest first downs, only 20th in passing yards allowed, and 7th worst in air yards allowed. So what that tells me is that teams can really attack this the Colts defense in the middle of the field or down the field. And then that plays right into Allen. I mean, you're looking at Diggs, you know, hitting those 10, 15-yard routes. You're looking at Brown down the field, Gabe Davis down the field. So here we have another top defense that we know Allen has done well against. Looking at these defense, is there anything that worries you?
What, with the Colts defense?
The Colts defense, yeah.
I mean, they've got Darius Leonard. He is a really good linebacker. I mean, their front the front three. I mean, they've got Houston, Bucknut. They are quality. So they've got quality in that front seven. Their defensive backs possibly a strong one, but I don't think there's enough really for us to worry about. I mean, you said about the amount of first downs they've allowed the Colts defense. The Bills are the only team this year with 20 first downs in every game. The only other team to ever do that was 2012 in the New England Patriots. And what we saw with Dolphins being the number one ranked defense and the most stingiest defense, the Bills dropped 50 plus points on them, really torn to shreds. So I think with what the Bills have done since the bye week and how this offense has actually grown, become more explosive, I'm not there's part of me that's going to be a bit worried about what this Colts defense can do. Because as I say, they have playmakers on that team.
Yeah.
But I've got that more and more confidence as it goes on that this offense can really light it up and actually and make us not have to worry about this Colts defense getting on top of us. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we'll probably have a, like usual, may go with a slow start on defense whilst it's actually warm up. But I can't see anything in that Colts defense that will cause us issues like other teams. I think they're all going to be in the same boat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look, like I said, with what Allen has been able to do against those top defenses, 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, in 7 games against top defenses. I mean, nothing about our offense makes me worry because they've been able to do it against all types of challenges. You know, focusing on what Indy has, they get pressure on 23% of passing downs, and that's with a blitz percentage of only 17%, which is second lowest in the league. So they get pressure on standard plays, and that's, like you said, from DeForest Buckner, 9.5 sacks. Justin Houston, 8 sacks. And Buckner's doing it from the defensive tackle spot, so he's getting through. So Morse Feliciano going to have a really important game here. Houston and Autry on the ends, 8 sacks, 7.5 sacks. So the tackles will be tested. This is a good defensive line. You mentioned Darius Leonard again. He's going to the Pro Bowl with 132 tackles. So that guy's all over the field. I mean, just Buckner, probably one of the top defensive tackles in the league behind Aaron Donald, 26 QB hits. That's 6th best in the league among all defensive players. And to get that from the defensive tackle spot, that's a really good player. So the offensive line is going to have a really big challenge here. But when you look at what Pittsburgh tried to do to us, you know, Allen was able to get it done. It wasn't pretty, but they were able to get it done. And I think that might be the theme for this game. It won't be pretty, but it'll get it done because that's what the playoffs are. You know, we're looking at, this is next level football. This is every single play. You have to treat it like it's the last play you're ever going to have. That's
playoff. No, exactly. Exactly. I think I am confident when we go into this. I mean, we've known what obviously Dawkins has said about the team from his Tribune article. The fact that they take it one step, then over since that Arizona game, they've gone up and up and up in confidence and bonding with that they're going to be right up for this. They know they take it game by game, and the ultimate Super Bowl is the Super Bowl for the team. I think they've got that confidence that even if God forbid, touch wood, that we actually that we lose, I don't see this team capitulating at all next season. I think it'll just make them a lot more hungrier. To go, but the way this team has got everyone's back, if there is someone that's having a bit of a down game, maybe Allen's not struggling, is struggling a bit to spread the ball.
And we kind of lost you there.
Bring him up. Hey?
Didn't hear what you just said at all.
Oh, man. What is wrong? I'll go back for everything now. No, but it's with the team. It's the way that if one of them has a bad game, you know, you've got your teammates there to back you up, big you up, get you motivated. Because of the bond that's so close, so it's one of those where a close knit game is really not going to affect their mindset. They take it game by game.
Yeah, I mean, remembering Allen's face after the Houston game, we've seen the GIF. It's been all over the internet. I never want to see him that upset again. That's my man. I never want to see that again. And I think the team, you know, they don't ever want to see him that upset again. So, you know, they're going to rally around anybody. If anybody's having a down game, they're going to rally. They're going to pump them up. I think it'll be all right.
Mm.
The last thing to look at is their secondary. Kenny Moore and Xavier Rhodes, they each have 12 pass defends. Moore has 4 interceptions. But Moore has also allowed 13 catches of 20 or more yards. I think he's going to be the target. If you're putting Xavier Rhodes on Diggs, it'll be Brown or Gabe Davis on Moore. And I think that's a massive matchup for us.
Yeah, that's why I said that.
You're going to be able to have the opportunity to take some shots. And if Allen can drop dimes like he did in Miami, that pass to Brown, if we can hit one or two of those, we're going to really open things up.
Yeah, that's why I said I'm not really worried about their defensive backs. There are ways they can get we can get through, and I'm confident in what this offense and what Diggs can do, what Brown can do, what even Gabe Davis can do, what Isaiah McKenzie can do, and even Cole Beasley.
With or without Beasley, I think that this offense is so deep they're gonna have trouble with us.
Yeah,
and the only thing that the Colts do well is stop the run. So it might be another day where we don't see anything from Singletary or Moss. Second lowest yards against, second lowest yards per carry. It's gonna then be a Josh Allen show.
But and then that can also be a weakness, so to speak, for the Colts. Because they'll stop the run, which will then mean they'll mean Allen will throw a lot more, so they're going to try and stop that a little bit more. Because what's harder to defend, the pass or the run?
Well, I mean, when stopping the run is your bread and butter, but I mean, the biggest thing for us is play action, and the Colts defend that really well. So this is going to be a game where Dable's going to have to adjust, and he's been able to do that every year. Dable's game plans have been able to attack your weakness because we have so many strengths. So there's just ultimate trust here.
Yeah. So the Colts stop the run. That's fair enough. Then we start tearing apart through the air.
Yeah.
The Colts are then going to have to make that adjustment to try and slow down the pass rate attack, which means they potentially would take a little bit away from their rush defense that could at least gain us a few more yards than what we potentially would be getting. So in a way, the strength of stopping the run for the Colts can also potentially become a weakness.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that where even if Singletary and Moss aren't getting like 100-yard games, in the third and fourth quarter, they're finding space because teams defend the pass so hard against us that they're leaving space for our running game late in a game. And that's how we're able to seal these games. So, I mean, we have ultimate strength on offense and the ability to really do anything. And I think that will be the narrative of the game.
Yeah. So give us your prediction.
30-23.
Okay. That's 30-23. I'm going to go 37-21.
Okay, another touchdown.
Yes. Okay. I think this offense really is motoring at the right at the right time.
Yeah, you're right.
I think the defense is coming good. So I think it will be another game where we actually we go out and we just put the points and the yards on.
I love it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm feeling it. I'm ready to go. Yeah.
So
one more day. Today's Thursday.
One more day to go.
Sleep all day Friday.
We're gonna have another mini podcast. A little chat with a member of the UK Colts fan group.
Yep.
To have a little discussion on that. So look forward for that dropping more than likely tomorrow. It's continue liking us on Facebook, hitting subscribe, hitting follow, hitting the notification buttons at UK_Bills @RWBB_podcast, Buffalo Bills UK on Facebook and YouTube. And if you've got any last words to add, Alex?
Yeah, and as you forgot again, hit that share button.
Fine. Okay, I'm going to write into a script next time.
Share button. We're talking about playoffs. It's time. Fine. We're going to be on. Everybody's going to be watching. You know, let your friends know. We're open for business. Let's grow the UK Bills Mafia. Hit that share button. Let's go.
Right. And I'm going to write that Warner script for the next next episode. So for Alex, I'm Matt saying good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for listening, subscribing, following, and go Bills.
Go Bills.
Yeah, not us. You don't know anything about heart. You don't know anything about work.
That's who we are.
Bills on three. One, two, three.